In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
That's right. Let's all go to the lobby. We're going to talk some movies here like we do Monday afternoons. Alan Adams of The Main Edge in the house, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Hello, Al.
Hello, how are you?
Wonderful, sir. How's your Monday so far?
So far, so good.
The weekend went well.
Yeah, it was very busy.
Yeah, a lot of things for you to get out and see.
Lots of stuff out there. Saw a couple of shows, saw some movies, did some things. You know how it goes.
I do. Well, you're a very busy man.
You were pretty busy this weekend, too.
I had a busy first part of the weekend,
sure.
And then about... I don't know, 40 hours of remembering my name and what time zone I was in.
Oh, yeah. The combination of the 2 hour loss plus the red eye flight, like, I imagine you're just now figuring out what day it is.
I think I went like 39, 40 hours without sleep.
Woof.
Yeah. But, you know, reaches a point where you. What the heck?
Yeah, once you cross that threshold, it's like, all right, I guess this is what we do now.
I'll go to bed when it's time to go to bed.
This is who I am now.
Have some freaky dreams. Yeah. But hey, all worth it. Black Bears keep on keeping on. So you saw a couple of movies this weekend.
I did. I saw, one in the theater, and one was a Netflix release.
Is that the one you saw, Gary?
Indeed, I believe it is.
Yes. Mowgli, Legend of the Jungle.
Yes.
We'll start with that one.
All right.
It had a limited theatrical release here a couple of weeks ago, but Netflix put it on their streaming service this past Friday. And, they did that because this movie falls victim to what I call the Armageddon Deep Impact multiple movie syndrome. And what that means is sometimes Hollywood gets it into its head, that its collective head, that there's a good idea for a movie. And what happens is multiple studios start working on the same general idea at the same time. And sometimes what you get is the aforementioned Armageddon Deep Impact, Volcano versus Dante's Peak, you know, that sort of thing. The issue here is these two Jungle Book movies, this one that we're talking about today and the 2016 CGI live action movie, the Disney version directed by Jon Favreau, they started at roughly the same time, but this newer version, this latest version, encountered a number of delays. And so the Disney movie hit theaters first and was a critical and commercial success to a really, frankly, significant degree. Like, it made several hundred million dollars, was one of the highest grossing movies of the year, and was just generally lauded by critics and audiences alike. And so this new movie feels very much like an afterthought, and that would have been okay. It could have avoided that if it was better, but it's just it's clearly an ambitious project. It's directed by Andy Serkis, who's most well known for his work with motion capture performance, and so this movie, which has been a passion project of his for years, also involves significant mocap work, and what that means is, I don't need to go into the story of the Jungle Book. Like, everybody pretty much knows that young Mowgli, parents die in the jungle. He's raised by wolves. Only to be sort of set upon by the tiger Shere Khan, et cetera, et cetera. The crazy thing about this movie, and it's a little unsettling, is they did mocap work with all the animals. And so it's the actors who played these various animals doing motion capture work. And so what you get are tigers and panthers and bears and snakes that remind you of famous actors to an unsettling degree.
Wow.
So, I mean, if you ever wanted to know what Benedict Cumberbatch looked like as a tiger, well, now you do, because that was the most pronounced one. I saw a couple of other ones. It's a great cast. Christian Bale plays Bagheera the Panther. Serkis himself plays Baloo. Cate Blanchett as Ka the Python, and Cumberbatch as Shere Khan. And it's just weird enough where you're like, because Cumberbatch has such a distinct face, like his features are so distinct, his the shape of his eyes, how they're set, all that stuff. And that's basically on a tiger. And it's a little weird to think about. Now, don't get me wrong, like there's stuff to like about this movie. Like it's a darker take on the Kipling tale than we've gotten in the past. It's clearly like visually, especially like a lot of the background rendering and stuff, the combination of video and computer generated and all that stuff. Like it looks really good. But it's, I don't know, lacking in soul a little bit. Mm. And I think that a lot of that can be chalked up to the fact that it kind of came together a little haphazardly, I think, and they weren't able to necessarily commit to and make the connections that were necessary to really make that story sing. And of course, it suffers from proximity to the more successful version. Like if this movie existed in a vacuum, I think it would have been received very, very differently. Because we just, you know, not 2 years ago saw a superior version of the movie, and you can't help but make those comparisons. That said, I mean, it's a great cast. Bale's wonderful. Cumberbatch is all Cumberbatchy. Kate Blanchett, you know, as a snake, is oddly attractive. It's weird. Yeah, it's weird.
Carrie is nodding in the affirmative.
Yeah, like, you know, it's like, I'm not gonna sit here and pretend like it wasn't.
Damn, that snake is hot.
But the thing is, like, these are great actors, but they're not necessarily as well versed in the differences that come with motion capture. There's a much more exaggerated sort of attitude you have to take with it. Physically, because you're losing so much nuance in the mapping process. And so obviously, like, you know, Circus as Baloo, who he plays as basically like a grizzled, like, World War One soldier, and it's fantastic. Like, he's great in this movie. But the other actors, they just don't quite reach that level. And I think it's just because they weren't necessarily steered to go big enough. Like, there's a pantomime-y kind of nature to the performances that I think is necessary for it to translate, which, again, is another reason why it's, you know, it's very much a specific skill, and one that I think, you know, people like Andy Serkis and Toby Kebbell's another one, who really warrant more attention for how good they are at it, because it is something that you can be good at or bad at, regardless of your actual acting ability. So, but yeah, so Mowgli, Legend of the Jungle... it was okay. Like, I understand why Netflix kind of did the dump, because it clearly wasn't gonna make the splash at the box office that I think they wanted it to, they needed it to, and so they just moved it over to their streaming service, where they can tell us however many people watched it. They could say whatever number they want, and no one will ever know.
Exactly. All right, that's the story on Mowgli. I'm very interested because I've read a lot, heard a couple of interviews with Melissa McCarthy talking about her new movie that sounds like a real change of pace for her.
Yeah, it's called Can You Ever Forgive Me? It's based on a true story, the true story of the biographer Lee Israel, who in the early 90s was caught up in a scandal when she got busted forging and selling these sort of letters from famous literary figures. Look, being an actor in Hollywood is tough. And even being a well-known and well-regarded actor can be tough when you're someone like Melissa McCarthy, who achieved her success in a very specific way. And there's no question she's a very gifted physical comedian. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, once you kind of achieve success in that one particular area, whatever it might be, you know, filmmakers are less inclined to go outside that box when they're like, oh, well, I already know you're good at this. Here's another opportunity to do that thing that we already know that you're good at. And so it's always been one of those things where I've felt like McCarthy had more to offer than just, you know, cursing and falling down. But the opportunities are few and far between. This is very much that kind of opportunity. It's It's the sort of chance that can really drastically alter, I think, the trajectory of an entire career if it's done well. And I mean, she's phenomenal in this movie, Rich. She's so good. She plays Lee Israel, and she is she's hard drinking. She's sad. She's a fundamentally broken person. She is she's irascible. She's persnickety. She's rude and just completely unlikable. She's an unlikable character. And you know, for someone like McCarthy, who kind of has that, you know, that likability sort of built in, to be able to suppress that and sort of subvert it and twist it into something where it's like the charisma is still there, but it's like almost like an anti-charisma, where it's just like she's really just genuinely unpleasant. But yeah, it just follows her. In the 70s and 80s, Lee Israel had written a number of celebrity biographies that were fairly successful, you know, New York Times bestsellers. But she had reached a point by the early 90s where people were sort of losing interest in the sorts of stories that she was telling. Her agent wasn't returning her calls, and she was running out of money. You know, she was, you know, months behind on her rent. Her cat was sick. Like, she needed to come up with a way to pay the bills. To do so, she sold one of her prized possessions, which was a personal letter from Katharine Hepburn, because Israel had done a biography on Hepburn years before. And that's when she discovered that there was a real market for these sorts of letters. In the course of research for her latest project, it was a biography of Fanny Bryce, the vaudevillian actress. She discovers more. And this is a complete, like, this really happened, I guess. It's such a weird sort of synchronicity kind of coincidence. She found letters from Fanny Bryce to some random person, like tucked into a library book. She, being a kind of a terrible person, you know, snagged them, pocketed them, and then took them off to try to sell them. And that's when she realizes, she's told, well, I mean, these are okay, but it's always better when you can have a little bit more of the writer's voice in those letters. So she gets the idea. She basically takes one and adds a P.S. And sells it for significantly more money. And then she's off to the races. Like, she starts, because that's her skill set, is to be able to subvert her own persona and try to recreate the voice of these famous people. So she's doing like Noel Coward and Dorothy Parker and like all these famous people, like creating these letters and basically selling them to all these dealers all over New York City, which is all well and good until word starts getting out that there might be forgeries out there. She gets put on a list where she's, you know, people are basically like, don't sell to this person. And so that's when she enlists her friend Jack, played beautifully by Richard E. Grant, who's kind of a sort of hipster hustler guy, you know, who kind of exists on the fringes of the creative community in New York City, and enlists him to start doing the selling for her. But as schemes like this tend to, it was not long before things fall apart a little bit and it starts spiraling down, and she has to figure out what, if anything, she can do to reverse course and avoid potentially significant consequences. You know, I mean, the FBI is involved. Like, it's not like it's no small thing at this point. It's just a remarkable performance on her part. Like, she's like, it's her movie. Like, there are other folks in it. I mentioned Grant, who's very good. Jane Curtin plays her agent.
Oh, wow.
But it's the Melissa McCarthy show in all the best ways, because, again, like I said, it's like all of that energy that she has, she really kind of like reverses the polarity of it almost, and just turns it from this sort of font of positivity to something really dark and negative. And there's a bleakness to her portrayal that's really compelling, but it's still very funny, like dark, but it's really funny. And so you put all that together, and it's just like, and it's just a mind-blowing kind of performance, the sort of thing that you, you know, that, you know, you kind of always maybe suspected she might be capable of, but not anything you ever really thought she'd have a chance to do. And if it's as well received come award season as I think it's going to, I think it's going to drastically alter the sorts of roles she's going to have. At least she's at least going to have options that she never had before following this movie.
I heard an interview with her too, and she was talking about what an amazing job the design people did in recreating an earlier New York City.
Oh, it's set in 1991, and so there's just a grungy dinginess to everything, where it's just like, oh right, yeah, New York City used to be a really dirty place. Like, I mean, it's still kind of dirty, but it's been sanitized. Like, certain aspects of it have been sanitized, certainly in the last decade plus. But yeah, her apartment is gross. Like, alleys and like diners and like the sorts of people that she's hanging out with. Like, it's remarkable, and it's a wonderful looking movie. And again, like, enough, I can't say enough good things about the performance that she puts forward.
That sounds great. Good stuff here. Thank you, Alan.
Yeah. Oh, one more thing. I wanted to let you guys know.
Oh.
A little bit of interesting news as of last week. I am officially Tomato Meter approved.
Oh, that is awesome.
I am part of the Rotten Tomatoes family.
Fantastic.
As of last week. So yes, my reviews will be available on the Rotten Tomatoes site, and my numbers will be contributing to the freshness or rottenness of movies going forward.
That's fantastic. Good for you.
Yeah, pretty excited about it.
Wow. Clearly the downtown bump.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt.
You're right. Thanks, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams of the Main Edge movie reviews every Monday. You can go to Rotten Tomatoes, or you can go to the movie review link right on the downtown page as well. And, of course, make sure you read them in the Main Edge, too. Alan Adams back with us on Wednesday.